Hello, it's great to have all of you back. As you know, we are now on the 18th chapter of the Gita. We have covered all 17 chapters in the previous episodes, and Sister Denise will take us through the text of the 18th chapter so that we could understand what the final conversation between God and Arjuna really meant. Because of this being the last chapter, we will be going through every single shloka because we felt it is important for you, the viewer, to understand what the full breadth and depth of this conversation entails. Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It feels bittersweet to be at the 18th chapter, but here we go. This chapter starts with Arjuna asking Sri Krishna a question, and he wanted to know the truth, specifically the difference between sannyas and renunciation. And the answer that is given to him is on verse 2, which reads, "The Blessed Lord spoke, the relinquishment of actions prompted by desire, the sages understood as sannyas, and the relinquishment of the fruit of all action, the wise declare to be renunciation." Now, Sister Denise, those words and terminology are very close to each other in terms of their meanings. Could you explain what the difference is and what specifically is meant by relinquishment in this context?
There are two words. One is tyag, one is sannyas. So tyag means renunciation of one type. Sannyas is renunciation of another type. So tyag is used for renunciation of the fruit of action. And that means you do the action, but not for the fruit. So that means it becomes action according to the law of karma, which doesn't bind you in bondage. Sannyas is the idea in the Vedas that action is by definition binding you, and therefore it has to be renounced. So you have two strands of thought here. One is the Vedic thought of sannyas, and the other is the ideas given by the speaker of the Gita, God, who says, no, it's not like that, but you can do action without tying yourself to the fruit of it, and that will carry you to the karmatit stage, the stage where you are free from the bondage of action. If we look at verse 1 for a moment, the epithets that are given when Arjuna is speaking to God, he calls him Mahabayo, the mighty armed one, and of course Krishna is not bearing any arms. And then he calls him Rishikesh. And Rishikesh is, of course, one of the main places of pilgrimage, and it is also an expression that refers to Shiva. So you have in the epithets this ambivalence of who is being addressed here.
We go on to verse 3, which reads, "Some men of wisdom declare that action is to be abandoned and is full of evil, and others say that acts of sacrifice, giving and austerity are not to be abandoned." And in verse 4, we hear the conclusion given by God. "Concerning renunciation, Arjuna, renunciation is declared to be of three kinds." And this is contained in verse 5, which reads, "Act of sacrifice, giving and austerity are not to be abandoned, but rather to be performed. Sacrifice, giving and austerity are purifiers of those who are wise." I find the last line, Sister Denise, to be particularly interesting because he doesn't only speak of the action but of the consequence for the soul. So the law of karma is brought in here. Could you take us through that?
Well, this is a special thing. If we look at verse 3, you see the word is yagya dan pure karma. So sacrifice doesn't mean you're sacrificing, but yagya means something different. Especially in Brahma Kumaris, we talk about the yagya as the instrument that enables a person to have karma with God. So if you have karma with another human being, that puts you in bondage. If you have karma with matter, that puts you in bondage. But if you have karma through the yajna with God, that takes you out of bondage. In other words, it's a purifying thing. So yajna, dan, donation. Donation is a very important thing because donation is believed to be the thing that makes you free from bondage. So yajna, dan, and then pure karma, very important. So pure karma is here translated as austerity. So it's not an austerity in the sense of you're doing some sort of harsh exercise that is harmful for the body, but you're doing something which is motivated by spiritual principles. So it's a very, very different kind of action, and I think quite difficult to put into an English translation, which is why I was drawing attention to it. So in the fourth verse, he talks about the three varieties of tyag, which is again different from sannyas. And then as we go further with that, as you were reading, so sacrifice, yajna, giving, dan, and
austerity.
The austerity, the punya, the very, very pure karma, highest level of karma, all of these things are actually considered those things that actually settle karma. And so this is why they're called purifiers. And so when he talks about the wise, it means people who know this stuff. And then if you go to the next verse, verse number 6, there you see the whole question of abandoning attachment to the fruits. So what happens is you are performing very, very pure karma. And you know, theoretically, that it's anyway going to give you good fruit. But you're not involved in that, you're not concerned about it, you're not doing it because of the reason of the fruit. So you are abandoning your attachment to it, which means that if by any chance you experience that there isn't any fruit of that, it doesn't matter because anyway there will be fruit sooner or later. But that's not why you're doing it. You see, you're not doing it because of what you're getting out of it. So this makes it as renunciation.
Yes, Denise, from a very practical perspective, we have touched on this before, but I'd like to take it up again because this is the 18th chapter. What is contained in verse 6? These actions, however, are to be performed abandoning attachment to the fruits. This is my definite and highest belief, Arjuna, capital M. So God is saying these words to Arjuna. Yes, Denise, abandoning attachment to fruits. And firstly, it takes place on a very subtle level. Sometimes you have desires for the return without even knowing about it because you haven't admitted it to yourself. And secondly, it's even if you are aware of it, it's a deep thing within human beings, a deep trait, to feel acknowledged for something that you do.
That's right. And this is really what you're abandoning. You are actually consciously renouncing any kind of feeling of needing to be acknowledged. You don't want anything back because you want to make a complete investment. And so what will come back to you is not on your say-so or on your time, but you will just abandon it to time and it will come to you when it comes to you. You're not concerned about it.
Let's go now to verse 7. But renunciation of obligatory action is not proper. The abandonment of it through delusion is proclaimed to be tamasic. That I find very interesting. I see the same thought is taken up again in verse 8 and continued. He who abandons action merely because it is difficult or because of fear of bodily suffering performs a rajasic renunciation. He does not obtain the fruit of that renunciation. Sister Denise, I'll stop right there at the end of verse 7. Could you tell us what the meaning is?
Let's look at 7, which is the tamasic renunciation. That means a person is giving up something. They're making it look like they're giving up something, but actually they're not really giving it up because obligatory action means your duty. So sometimes people don't want to do their duties. For example, you get married and you have children and you say, well, I'm going to renounce, I'm going to give up and take sannyas and leave my wife and children to their own devices. This is an example of tamasic renunciation because you have avoided fulfilling your duty to your wife and children, and in that way you have incurred negative karma. So that's a really bad thing to do. But there are a lot of people who do it and justify it through various different logical expressions. But here you have God saying, you're not fooling me. I know exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. And I'm telling you the fruit of this action is not good. So bear it in mind. When you shift to 8, which is a different guna altogether, the rajasic renunciation, it is rajasic because the person is abandoning performing an action because it's difficult, or he's abandoning it because of fear of suffering. So, for example, there are some rituals or some actions that a person may undertake and then they'll give up because it's too hard. That's not good. Mm-hmm. Or they'll give it up because it's too painful. That's also not good. But it's not that you're hurting somebody else. Mm. It's not that you're delinquent in your duty. So you can see the contrast between the really pure renunciation, the middle level, the rajasic, and then the tamasic. And I think this whole chapter is talking about the different kinds of people, their different way of interacting with the principles of spirituality, their different relationship with God on all of these three levels. And I think, again, it is emphasizing the idea that people are different and they fall in different categories and they have to be evaluated differently because they fall in different categories. Whereas in the West, we say everybody is equal and they have to be evaluated equally. Here it is saying not at all. It's interesting.
Let's move on to verse 9, which speaks of sattvic renunciation, which brings us to the crux, as we now know what not to do. So now it's telling us what to do. When action is done because it is a duty, Arjuna, and abandoning attachment to the fruit, such renunciation is thought to be sattvic.
Yeah, this is a really beautiful expression of how we need to act. So dharma is an important subject. Dharma, you have your caste dharma, or you just talk about dharma. What is my duty as a human being? So your context, your birth, whatever is your duty, if you do not perform that, then it means you're delinquent in your duty. So that would be a negative karma. So you have your duty, but if you perform your karma and take the fruits of it, that's ordinary. So what makes it special is you perform your karma, but you don't take any credit for it. you do not take the rewards. It's like you're reinvesting everything that you're getting, so you're not taking anything. This is called really pure renunciation. And this is really, I think, very practical, because we in the world, we're not going off into the mountains or something like this. We have our duties, we have our responsibilities. And this is always the question for people, especially in the West, how do I do this and still fulfill my duties, responsibilities, job, etc., and so forth? So this stanza, number 9, is really helpful to show us how to do that.
Hmm. Mr. Denise, I want to move now from the theory of what is contained in the Bhagavad Gita, the text, to, actual life, reality. It is presented as the 3 different categories, but then it is incumbent upon each individual to decide which of their behavior patterns fall into which category. You need quite an astute intellect to know what your motive is in each situation and what your action is. How do you go about putting what is contained here into your practical life? Because on paper, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. Okay? Because it is saying, do not create suffering and sorrow for yourself. Create happiness for your own future by your own words and your own action. That is the most noble way to live. However, to implement this is a whole different subject. How does one go about implementing this?
Here we are in the last chapter. The assumption is we've gone through the other chapters, and I feel that the Gita is really taking a person step by step up to this final point. So it means that we would have been working on ourselves, working on our situation for a while. But again, I would say this verse number 9 is really good, because you just look at yourself and say, okay, this is my situation. And your conscience will let you know what your obligations are, because it speaks to you internally, intuitively. So then you put your feelings of your conscience against the description that's given here, and then you make an evaluation. And of course, it's quite possible when you're making an assessment like this that you may be slightly wrong. But I feel that when a person is developing themselves spiritually, the conscience is getting more and more refined. And when you're in remembrance of God as a practice, a regular daily practice, every time you're not doing the right thing, your experience of connectedness with God will sort of fade or shut down. So you look at your conscience, and every time your action is not quite right, your connection with God will become faded, or it will break down, and then you have to reset it, and it will just tell you from the inside if you're off track, you see. So you have a combination of your intuition, your conscience, your own power of discrimination, and then you have the words that are coming from God telling you that you must not abandon your duty, but you must abandon your desire for the fruits of the action, or taking credit, you see.
Yeah, and Sister Denise, it's quite a challenge to get there, isn't it? It's this is not easy.
Well, Raj Yoga is known to be the highest possible undertaking anyone could do. So it takes a very exceptional person in the first place to say, okay, I think that this is for me. I want to become a Raj Yogi at this level, you know. Of course, there are many levels on which to approach it, but here we're looking at the very highest level. But you can understand, in terms of leadership, because Raj Yoga means the yoga for sovereignty, so it's about leadership. If you have a person who is very sensitive to doing the right thing at every level, that will be a very good leader.
Mm, and there are very few of those.
But it's needed, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Mm. So Denise, verse 10 was a verse that I found very interesting and thought-provoking, and I'll tell you why in a minute. The man of renunciation, the wise man, whose doubt is cut away filled with goodness, does not hate disagreeable action, nor is he attached to agreeable action. Now, Sister Denise, this is what humanity has become. If someone commits a crime, we do not say, oh, here goes so-and-so, on this day he did that. We say, that's a robber, that's a thief. 20 and 30 years later, that's a thief. We tend not to see the action, we tend to see the person with a contaminated character and brand him or her accordingly for life, okay? And part of the reason why we do this is for our own protection, because who wants to be associated with somebody who is a potential threat to you? So how does one interpret the reality of what we've become in the light of what is contained in verse 10?
Well, this is the question of labeling, isn't it?
Mm.
It's very easy for us to find fault in other people. Mm. But as has been mentioned in a number of scriptures, like you see the parable of the prostitute in the Bible who's being stoned, and Jesus says, well, the first person who has no sin, let him throw the stone.
Mm.
And there wasn't anybody.
Mm. I really like that story, because it's very kind and benevolent. However, Sister Denise, that's not what we've become today. We've become the opposite of what is contained in verse 10.
Well, that's right. And this is why we have verse 10, so that we can look at ourselves and really do the right thing. I think these last two lines are particularly interesting. A man of renunciation, a wise man, doesn't hate disagreeable action. You know, sometimes we may have to do something that we don't want to do because it's unpleasant, because it's beneath our dignity or whatever. But a wise man wouldn't take it like that. That's a sign of arrogance. You know, a wise man isn't arrogant. And the wise man wouldn't say, well, I'll only do this type of action and I won't do that type of action, because this is the unwiseness of arrogance being shown up here. So I think also this is a very good verse for a person to meditate on and think about their wisdom related to not being arrogant about what they will and will not do.
Sister Denise, I think implied in your answer is the fact that there are actions that we should perform that aren't necessarily nice. Okay, for example, if someone chooses to become an Olympic athlete, that's years and years and years of intense work, you know, back-breaking, painstaking work, and none of it's nice. We all clap when he or she receives the gold standing on the podium, but none us who are not involved in that won't know what went behind that. So I think this opens my eyes to that type of, that part of reality.
Yes.
Mm.
But even on a day-to-day basis, you know, in fulfilling your responsibilities in the home, you know, who wants to be the one to take out the garbage and clean out the bathrooms and everything? No, we don't want to do that. Somebody else can do that. You see, it's beneath your dignity. There's that side of it. Mm. And a wise person will understand what needs to be done and do it, rather than say, well, this is only suitable for me and so I will do it. Mm. There's that side too. Yeah.
Okay, so within wisdom, there's humility.
There has to be humility, yes.
Sister Denise, I think we'll end the episode at this juncture because we have a lot to cover and we've run out of time today. But thank you for your refreshing view on what chapter 18 contains. And I'm sure the viewer as well is quite eager is the word I'm looking for, to know what's coming next. So thank you for that. So there you have it. Sister Denise has discussed terminology contained in the first part of chapter 18 as regards renunciation, austerity, and again the three gunas are raised. And I think Sister Denise is asking us to use the Bhagavad Gita as a mirror to look at your own life and ask yourself, where are you at? If you have to read this part of the Bhagavad Gita, how would you use it to measure your own character? And if you are of the view that there's room for improvement, what is stopping you from becoming a better person right now? And I particularly like the emphasis on renouncing the fruit of action that comes up again time and time again throughout the Bhagavad Gita, and especially in the 18th chapter, which means that God cannot stress or emphasize this lesson enough to Arjuna and therefore to us. So a very deep message that is contained in chapter 18. I hope you take it to heart, and I hope that what is contained in this chapter and what was shared in this episode is of some usable interest to you in your life. Thank you so much for joining us, Sister Denise, and thank you at home for your ear, and I hope to see you again for the next episode. Take care and goodbye.